All right. Welcome, welcome. So tonight we're going to go over the sex inventory. We're in the middle of this long process of inventory. We talked about fear last week, the exact nature of pretty much everything. And tonight we're going to talk about motives, relationships, walking towards a new sex ideal. So I'm going to say a prayer for us. Thank you, Lord, for bringing us here tonight. Thank you, God, for giving us the opportunity to be honest, to be open. Please help us to continue to set aside everything we think we know. Give us an open mind, a new experience. Help us see the truth about the motives, our intentions, our behaviors, and all of our important relationships in our lives. Help us to continue to face and be rid of the things inside of us that are blocking us. In your name we pray. Amen. So what you guys are going to find is that it's just like anything else. You're going to get out of this what you give, pretty much. That's kind of how it's going to work. The amount of effort and time and willingness and honesty that you're able to muster up, the more results that you're going to get. We'll talk about continuing this process and staying connected when we get towards the end. And then, of course, helping somebody else. But I know the inventory is kind of painstaking to some of us. It's redundant. We've done it before. We feel that we've seen everything and know everything. And then some of us have never been through it thoroughly all the way. And so it's scary. My advice is just continue to ask for willingness. Remember, this is the God of your understanding. So come to terms with a power in your life that is good, that is loving, and do your best to lean on that through this process, because it can get a little painful and frustrating at times. So if fear was the evil and corroding threat for us, and it's kind of find out that all things objectionable in our lives are driven by that, we're also going to find that fear is a big factor in our relationships and our motives. But it's important to see how we've been showing up in life. How have we been showing up interacting with other people? So it says here, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. So what's an overhauling? Like a complete dismantling and rebuilding. So that's kind of what we're doing. We're going to take a look at what our relationships have looked like, what our intentions really were, the harm that we've caused. And we're going to make an attempt to rebuild. And they're going to focus heavily tonight on, just like any other portion of this work, we can't rebuild without God's help. So I'll talk about tonight as we read through this, about praying for willingness, praying for guidance, praying for help. It says, but above all, we try to be sensible on this question. So remember, we're validating our pain. We are recognizing what we've been through. We're not minimizing it. We're not dismissing anything. And here we're going to try and be sensible. Sexual relationships are very sticky, painful, detrimental to our emotions and our psyche. And we find at times that they kind of dictate how we feel in life, how we carry ourselves. When my relationships are going good, I'm doing well. When my sex life and relationship world falls apart, I tend to fall apart. And that's something to contemplate. So it's so easy for us to get way off track here. Here we're going to find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. So people have all kinds of different ideas about sex and sex relations and what's okay and what's not okay. It says one set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity for procreation, right? So sex is here for one purpose, to reproduce. It's ugly, it's evil, it's wicked. And those are ideas that some people have. And sometimes when we get in a bad place, we start to begin to beat ourselves up, shame ourselves, and carry around those same types of ideas. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. So then there's the other side of the corner, these people that are talking about we're men and women, we are made to interact, we are made to have sex. It's done for pleasure. We should do it as much as we want. There's nothing wrong with it. And some of us have carried around those ideas as well. One school would allow a man no flavor for his fare. So you're not allowed to have sex. The only purpose is for you to have children to recreate another life. And aside from that, it's wrong. It's evil. The other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. Have all the sex you want. Go out there, be promiscuous. Hook up with whoever. Well, what we want to do is we want to stay out of this controversy. We don't want to come at this with any idea. What we're trying to do here is we're trying to be open and honest about our past relationships, and we want to put it on paper. Just want to put it on paper. If we stick to the questions on these sheets, it can truly help us to see a lot of truth about motives, about intentions, about what we could have done better. We don't want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. Okay, so we're not going around telling you what's right, telling you what's wrong. This is an area where we kind of lean on our intuition, what's right, what's wrong, what does our gut tell us, our relationship with God. What would he have me do? We all have sex problems. That's what it says. All of us, every single one of us, have had problems with this in the past. We would hardly be human if we didn't. So what can we do about them? So here we are again with, we were talking about fears. What can we do about them? We're talking about resentments. What can we do about them? How can we master them? Now we're going to be talking about our sex conduct. What can we do about it? I think the most important thing for all of us to understand is that we can't do anything about what we've done in the past. We can only change what we do moving forward. So here we transcribed, it says, make a list of relationships. Now I'm going to leave this up to you guys. The book talks about a sex inventory. So if you're sticking to sexual relationships in your life, we want to look at the meaningful ones, the ones that lasted a minute, the ones, not the one night stands, not the fling for 3 days, 5 days. Okay. We're taking a look at real relationships so that we can look at how we actually showed up and what our motives and intentions were. Okay. This is also an opportunity to make a list of relationships in your life. And this could be something you can bring to your fifth step. I've done a relationship inventory on both of my kids, on my dad, and I've also done them on my wife and three other women that were meaningful relationships in my life. I will leave that completely up to you guys. If you've never been through the work before, I would say stick to the meaningful sexual relationships. If you've been through the work before and you've seen some truth in those relationships, then try putting a couple other relationships on paper. And if you feel so inclined, you can do them all. It's completely and utterly up to you. As long as you're honest about the meaningful sexual relationships in your life that you're willing to really, truly take a hard look at. So what we're going to do is we're going to review our own conduct over the past years. So this is going to be similar to our resentment inventory, to our fourth column. And tonight I'll share with you guys one of my sex inventories and also my deal, so we can get a pretty good example that you can take a look at. So how am I going to review my conduct over the years past? Well, I'm going to see where have I been selfish. Where was I selfish in this relationship? I'm going to put it on paper. Where was I dishonest in this relationship? Where was I inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? And then I'm going to ask myself, where was I at fault? And what could I have done instead? Now, this could be difficult. It's going to be exactly the same as the fourth column in the inventory. When we get to where we were at fault, we are going to disregard the other person completely. We have to completely disregard them. Pray for your ego and your pride to be set aside for the 20 minutes that you're writing this inventory. Be as honest and thorough as you possibly can. And remember, when we do that, it usually is a little bit ugly on paper. It's ugly. Okay. You see, for me, this portion of the inventory is just as important as not drinking and not getting high. Just as important. If I falter, if I fall short, if I go back to the man that I once was, everything will be lost. If I begin to treat people the way I did, if I begin to act out sexually the way that I have in my past, all is lost. It is so important for me to recognize how I've shown up in the past and how I need God's help to show up today. That doesn't mean I'm striving for perfection, but what it does mean is that I am definitely looking for progress. And it's like any other portion of this inventory, I develop a level of awareness that screams at me that there you go again, Jason, acting the way you know better. You know better. And a reminder that if you continue to fight this way, you will get nowhere. You cannot do this on your own power. Just like being sober. It is so important. See, I see some truth in my inventory, the resentments, I see the fears. I get to this place of understanding that I'm looking for acceptance and forgiveness, and I really need God's help with that. But when it comes to relationships in my life, there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere for me to hang on to a resentment deep down and really not let go of it. All my emotions are on my sleeve. Everything is out in the open. That's why this inventory for relationships should be focused on the sexual relationships, because they are the closest, most intimate relationships in your life. And those are the ones where we have really shown up for good or for bad. And that's what we want to take a look at here. So we're going to get all this down on paper and we're going to take a look at it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to put it on paper. We have some inventory sheets that I'll show you tonight. And we're going to put it on paper. Be as thorough and as honest as you possibly can. Ask yourself the question, how important is it for me to show up differently than I have in the past? How important is it for me to change? Remember, this is a program of attraction and not promotion. And the reason why we can't hide from this, I mean, I suppose the way you can hide from any type of sex inventory, relationship inventory, is if you remain isolated and single, and you're not really interacting with anybody. Even if that's the case today, you still have in the past. And so what we're about to talk about, this new ideal, is kind of setting us up for what we want to walk towards, how we want to grow. How do I want to show up? You see, the motives that I've had in past relationships will repeat over and over and over. If you do enough of these inventory sheets, you will see the same motives, the same fears, the same lack. It's just not getting what I'm looking for. And we hopefully come to terms. What I've come to terms with is that I've been looking for this love and validation in all of my relationships my whole life that they can never ever give me. Ever. Even when part of my change, part of my understanding of what a God-centered life looks like is recognizing that I must stop looking to you to make me okay. And it's so difficult and it's so hard to do. And if you're in a relationship now, you can understand how your emotions swing based on the emotions of your partner, based on what these interactions look like. And, or if you're not in a relationship, but you have been, you can look back and you can see how you had your highs and you had your lows and you had your screaming matches and then you had your love affairs and all of these different aspects of this relationship. And if I look hard enough, what I see is, just like resentment, I'm allowing you to control me. Because these motives and these intentions and these expectations that we have in these relationships, you're never going to live up to them. And that's something part of this, what I believe growth in relationships is letting go of expectations. Okay. I think real growth in a real relationship is loving somebody when they're at their worst, not their best. I think real growth and acceptance is understanding the fears and the defects of character in your partner and being able to come together in intimacy without sexual connection and having adult conversations about what's really happening and why are we going at each other's throats? Why haven't we talked in 3 days? Why are you so angry with me? Why am I so angry with you? Why can't we connect in the bedroom? Why is the only way we can connect in the bedroom? There's so many different areas of this. And you see, this is why my belief is that this is the most important portion of all of this. And it's also the most overlooked because a lot of us spend our lives looking for validation from other people. And it's so detrimental to our spirit, to our existence, and especially to real recovery. So I think understanding the shortfalls of others that we interact with on somewhat of an intimate level is a very, very big part of this entire inventory process and this growth. And the truth is, and this is my belief, I'll still call it the truth, none of it will be possible without God. And that's part of me dropping expectations and understanding that. No wonder. No wonder it's been like this and it will continue to be like this. Unless we can come together with a God of our own understanding and find a center of a place acknowledging that we don't have the power to change, we are going to recognize each other's faults, love each other at their lowest point, and find a way to accept that and understand that, I think is really, really powerful in growth in relationships. I'll talk about a little about that with my ideal when I share that with you guys tonight. So we're going to take these sheets. If you feel so inclined, make a list of all your relationships, children, mothers, fathers, siblings. What I would say is make sure that they're really important in their close relationships or were in the past. And if you don't do that, at least do a few of the sexual relationships that are in your past. And if you've had a multitude of partners, you don't need to do 10 sheets. There's no point. If you do a couple, say 3 or 4, you're going to see a pattern. So you have a question, Nisa? Go ahead.
Sorry, to interrupt. So, I feel a little bit confused because, so it's the sex inventory, right? But then I also hear you saying like other relationships. So am I supposed to do both or just like the meaningful sex and sexual relationships?
In your case, being that you're going to this work this way completely for the first time, I would stick to the meaningful sexual relationships.
Okay.
And find a couple of those and put those on paper. And
Okay.
then in the future, you guys can look at other relationships in life. It just helps with the truth.
Okay.
It helps with the amends process. So yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So now we're going to talk about the sex ideal. Okay. So having seen this, that's where we're at in the book on page 69. Having seen where I was, I totally have sex problems. I'd hardly be human if I didn't. What am I going to do about them? I'm going to review my conduct. Where was I selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? Completely removing the other person from the scenario. What should I have done? I'm going to put it all on paper. I'm going to take a look at it. All that information, after my sex inventories are complete, I am going to try. There's a key word. Remember, this is not perfection. And remember, without God's power, none of this is possible. So we are going to try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We're going to subject each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? So as we're looking at our past behaviors and our motives, we're going to create this new ideal. And this ideal we're going to put on paper. This is going to be in a narrative form, written on a blank sheet of paper that I recommend you guys keep, that you revisit. I had mine framed in my office for a little bit, but that was a little much. So took it down, right? Because that was just me trying to be perfect, right? Trying to do everything and anything I can. Because if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it better than anybody, which is ridiculous. So keep this sex ideal. Turning it into a form of a prayer is the most powerful and helpful aspect of all of this. As I read you mine tonight, you can see how I can take portions of that, turn it into a prayer. I'm asking for guidance. So it says here, we ask God to mold our ideals and to help us live up to them. Help me live up to this. I'm trying to create a new sex ideal. Why is it so difficult? Because I am not wired this way. I'm not wired to be understanding, compassionate, empathetic, sympathetic. Just not. I have to be right all the time. You need to love me the way that I need you to love me in order for me to be okay. And the paradox behind all of that is that it is impossible. And that's what I've come to terms with. I've been looking for love from all of my relationships in my life that they could never, ever give me. And once I see that God can give me that kind of love, then I begin to learn to accept myself. Then I begin to be able to look at you and that you are imperfect like me, that maybe you're looking for a love that I can't give you. Maybe we can begin to understand each other here. Maybe we can hold hands and lift this up to God. Maybe we can really talk about the power, right, that we need. So we remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good. So they're not bad. We're not condemning ourselves. Right? They're neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. So as you put this ideal on paper after you've written these inventories on relationships, I want you to dig deep when it comes to this ideal. I want you to strive for greatness in your relationship? But we're going to ask God to mold them, to help us live up to them. We have to be willing to grow toward it. Grow toward it. We're not going to put this on paper and expect ourselves to live up to that right away. Okay? That's why I believe this is so important. This takes so much work. There'll be a few resentments in your inventory, even after your fifth step, that you might be hanging on to a little bit. That's okay. I think the most important thing is to be honest about them with God. After the fifth step, after you've seen what's objectionable and you still feel it lingering, it's really time to have conversation with God. God, please just help me with this. I'm hanging on to it. I can't let go of it. Right? Same thing with the sex ideal. This is what I want. I wrote that. Did I really write that? I can never live up to that. That's right. We can never live up to it. So we're going to ask God to help us grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. So in this, especially with the spouses, long-term boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever, you're going to see some real harm that you've done. And it's going to help you in this amends process. It's going to take a lot of courage. And if for some reason you can't out to these particular people, there still is a way, and you can talk with your group leader. You can talk with me about making these amends in the form of letters, in the form of prayer, in the form of acknowledging the harms you've done. So there's always a way. So in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. So we want to remember, we don't want to bring about more harm in doing this. And as we get to the amends, we'll talk more about that. Just like our ninth step says, you know, we're willing to make these amends. And as long as we don't harm somebody else in doing so, we're going to go make these direct amends. Same with this. You may put on a couple of past sexual relationships, and you may be in a relationship now, and you're going to see some real harm, and you're going to get self-righteous, and you're going to say, you know what? Okay, you want me to be God-centered? I need to go talk to this person, and I need to apologize. Well, maybe. It's a real time to talk to your sponsor, step guide, and most important, be able to be honest with your partner today, your current partner, and say, hey, this is where I'm at. What? How do you feel about it? It's a little tricky. I've done it, and of course, it was like, no, I'm not okay with that. Okay. You know, it's tough sometimes, but we have to respect that. We're not trying to cause any more harm here as we're trying to heal. In other words, we're just going to treat sex as we would any other problem, right? Any other problem. We're going to put it on paper. We're going to see where we were at fault, where we were selfish, dishonest, afraid, self-centered, self-seeking. We're going to take it to God. We're going to talk to somebody about it. It says in meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. After our fifth step, we're going to be taking a look at our inventory before we go into our sixth and seventh step. We're going to be revisiting that. We'll be taking a real hard look at it and say, okay, do I see what's objectionable? I'm going to take this to God. The right answer will come if we want it. That's what it says. Do I believe the right answer will come if I want it? God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. So we're talking to a sponsor or a stepdad that we trust, somebody with good morals, somebody that's done this work, I think is what's really, really important. Somebody that's been through this work. And it says, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean that we're going to get drunk? So we put this ideal on paper, and all of a sudden, I'm finding myself just falling right back into my old ways. Does this mean I'm going to get drunk? Some people tell us so. That's what it says. But this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. And then we transcribe, that's what this inventory is about, seeing my past motives in relationships and choosing a new ideal for my future sex conduct. Even if I'm married, and I, okay, that doesn't matter. That doesn't mean I'm choosing an ideal for the next woman I'm going to be with. That means I'm choosing an ideal moving forward in this relationship here, now. What can get better? What can change? How can we heal? Right? Some of our ideals, I'll give you an example. This is my experience. If I fall short of it, I will get drunk. I will get loaded. Everything will be out the window. And my life will be blown up. You see, because I've been unfaithful in my marriage in the past. And so if my ideal today is to, one of my ideals, to remain faithful, to respect the institution of marriage, and I go back on that and I fall short from that, I'm done. It's over. It's worse than drinking. That's why for me, this relationship inventory and this sexual behavior and relationship interaction in my life is just as important. So not everybody has that for their history. Some of us do have past actions that we'd like to change, that if they reoccurred, it would be our demise. But what this is telling us here is that if we are sorry for what we have done, and have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe that we're going to be forgiven and that we'll learn our lesson. So don't be too hard on yourself. When you do this whole inventory process and you write your sex ideal and you go and you make your amends, you're meditating, praying in the morning, and you get in a blow up with your partner, and you're screaming and you're yelling, don't beat yourself up. Recognize it. Be aware of it. Or you find yourself isolating, or you find yourself not being able to connect intimately because of the fear. Just be aware of it. And ask yourself the question, do I have an honest desire to let God take me to better things? Right? Do I really have an honest desire? Not just a desire, an honest desire. There's a difference. Because if we do, then it says that we'll be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. That means we're going to learn from it. We're going to change. Can't be successful in this if we don't fail. Of course, remaining sober would be first and foremost. Failing there takes us back. That's not the end. I'm sitting here today, sober. If we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, then we're quite sure to drink. We're not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So if I do all of this and then I just say I'm a promiscuous type of guy and I just go back to my old ways, and let's say I've had, you know, semi-long-term girlfriends, a couple years, right? A couple years here, a couple years there, a couple years, 4 or 5 years here. And now I'm in a program recovery and I did this, all these steps, I did this inventory and I saw my motives and my history. And then the next thing you know, I'm out there hooking up with someone in a meeting here and then someone not in a meeting there. And then all of a sudden I'm falling back. That would be an example of my conduct continuing to harm others. And according to this, it says we're quite sure to drink. So to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for strength to do the right thing. It's another prayer. So what we read tonight, there was a prayer that say, we ask God to mold our ideals and to help us live up to them. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. And then we earnestly pray for the right ideal for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for strength to do the right thing. You see, the answer is right here, written in the book for us over and over and over in the form of prayers to God. It's the answer. If sex is very troublesome, so let's say, okay, you know what? This just isn't working out for me. I've done these steps. I just can't connect. And, maybe I'm so afraid of commitment. At the same time, I'm afraid of being alone. I'm kind of just all over the place. What do I do? We throw ourselves the harder into helping others. That's what we do. We take ourselves from a place of self to a place of service. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, the dominating urge inside of us. When to yield to that would mean heartache. And that's what would happen when I yield to this urge that's going on. Okay. So that's what the book talks about, the sex inventory and the sex ideal. Hopefully we've transcribed this portion. I mentioned a while back, transcribe all the way up until the end of page 71 so that you can go through this and ask yourself questions as you're writing this ideal. Do I believe sex is very troublesome? Do I believe I must throw myself the harder into helping others? Do I believe I must think of their needs and work for them? So these are questions I'm asking myself. That this will take me out of myself and quiet this dominating urge. Right? Have I seen my motives in relationships? Am I sorry for what I have done? Do I have an honest desire to let God take me to better things? This is why we transcribe. So that you can open this book and really read it. Because without that, you're good. Of course, yes. Oh, yes, I do. Do you? I don't know. Nobody's forcing you to answer questions anymore. The rest of the way through the work. There's no questionnaire after our third step. But we continue to write a bunch of questions for the remaining 33 pages. So what does that mean to you? You know? See how important is that? I like to drop back and read it at times the way I've transcribed it. It's really powerful. Slowly and kind of contemplating. So that's the sex inventory out of the book. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to pull up mine. Because I love you guys. I'm not afraid to share it with you. It's pen to paper, nothing fancy. You know me. So, here we go. Okay. You guys can see that, right? Okay. So this is what our sheet looks like. Okay, so take a close look. This is what you're going to be writing on. This is the paper. These are what the sheets look like. Okay, this is the sex inventory worksheet. See that prayer up there? God, please help me see the truth about my conduct in relationships. Everything we do here is about a prayer. And I know it gets kind of silly and redundant and overwhelming, but not really, you know. And if it's not for you and you're super comfortable, then go hard and make it specific to exactly what you're doing. So when you pull this sheet out, close your eyes or get on your knees and say, God, please help me see the truth about my conduct in relationship. Because my ego and my pride want to tell me everybody else is wrong. And I really didn't harm anybody too much, maybe a little, right? So this is Sarah, that's my wife. And it says the first thing we're going to do is we're going to write a brief history of the relationship. So this is our motives for getting involved here. Okay. So this says when I was 13, and that's when I met my wife, right? She was 17. Motives were purely sexual. I saw an older, hot girl and I wanted to have sex to let myself and everybody know that I was cool. After being apart for a while, my motives were to get back together and was to prove to myself and to everyone that I could have whatever or whoever I wanted, even if she was your girlfriend. See, I just went and I just took her back from a good friend of mine. Well, that's a whole other story, right? Why? Because I wanted to prove to everybody that I'm better than you. I wasn't thinking about her. It was about all this love. It was about me proving the world that I'm worthy. See, this is how we see through. These are real motives. And I also wanted to prove to myself and everyone that I'm the best, right? And the little red there, that's written during my fifth step, coming from my sponsor. You know, also to prove to her that she couldn't leave me. She broke my heart when I was 13. I carried around a resentment and find out all the way until about a year ago for that. Blew me away. I saw that through going through this work. So that's an idea of what our motives look like. What were your motives in getting involved with this relationship? Self. Think of self. Okay. If it looks all good and awesome, you're lying. I'm just going to be honest with you. You're lying. You're trying to cover something or validate something in your life, and we need to find it. So now we're going to talk about our specific conduct. What was my specific conduct in this relationship, right? I've been very controlling. I've been emotionally abusive. I always put myself and my needs first. I was unfaithful a lot of the times, not caring of the consequences. I've been entitled the whole time, doing what I want, when I want, because I make the money and I provide for the family. I always know what's right and never allowed her to build any confidence, right? I had my foot on her throat. 29 years, right? Because I just saw this last year, about a year and a half ago. And I shared this with her, by the way. That was tough. I read this whole thing to her. I leave that to you guys. I don't know that I recommend that, but that's personal preference. It's honest, if you ask me. Here's me, honey, I'm vulnerable. This is the shit I've done. This is what I put on paper. Check this out. Major points that came up in the relationship. So I think the major points were excessive yelling, fighting, always butting heads on discipline for our oldest son. That was my adopted son. Financial strain was always an issue. Putting work before a relationship. Then I had an affair through which during that time I proceeded to tell her about all the times that I was unfaithful because I was trying to push her away because I was too scared to be alone. I had to have her leave me. And so I told her every ugly thing I had ever done all the way back to, by the way, I cheated on you when you were pregnant with our son. Like just, it was really, really bad. So this led up to 6 years of pain and suffering, separation for periods of time, and a lot of doubt. This was the 6 years from 2012 to 2018 before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous of hell. after coming home from an affair, trying to fix it on our own power. And these are going to be different for all of us. What you're going to recognize, your motives are going to be the same. They're going to be similar. You're going to see that search for validation and self in there. And that's what I want you to really, really see. So how did it end? How is it now? Today, the relationship's so much better. There's still a lot of work to be done. Since step work and sobriety, we've invited God into our marriage and our home. We don't fight really at all, which changed recently. We've had a little rough patch. So again, falling short of my ideal, not beating myself up, recognizing it, talking about it, trying to love her at her worst and hoping she can love me at my worst. Nothing like we used to. We can have difficult adult conversations and enjoy each other's company. So that's kind of what it's like today. Key word, difficult. They are so hard. When we're vulnerable and we're honest and we're trying to have a discussion without yelling or proving who is right and wrong, it is so hard. The best results I've had is to stop, hold hands, say a prayer, revisit it the next day. That's the best results I've got. And that's hard because that takes a level of humility that I am not used to. I can't do it. So that's our first sheet. Okay. Then we go to our second sheet. And then here we go again. What's on top? Prayer. God, please help me see the truth about my conduct and relationships. So where had I been selfish in what I just told you guys? I've always been thinking of myself first. I've never admitted fault. I'm always right, and I know what's best. That's ugly. It's an ugly truth about me. Where had I been dishonest? All the lies about other women, cheating multiple times, promising never to do it again. Where had I been inconsiderate? Everywhere we go, I look at other women, making her feel less than. I have an attitude that you're lucky to be with me. See how ugly it is? I don't even like to read it, man. Because it's the truth. It sucks. And this is how honest I would like you guys to get. I'd like you to be able to share this with the person you sit down your fifth step and to see what's really objectionable in your lives. To understand how you got. Whom did I hurt? So we're going to look around this relationship. Hurt my children. I subjected them to the fighting all the time. I hurt her with dishonesty and infidelity. Did I arouse jealousy? Of course. When a man is unfaithful and stays in a relationship, the jealousy is a dark cloud over both of you. And it still is today. I have to accept her at her worst and hope that she can accept me at my worst. It's easy to accept our partners in relationships when they're at their best. Think about it. And we feel great. Everything's going good. Did I arouse suspicion? Yes, by being dishonest, choosing another woman over my life, created doubt in her mind whether or not I really loved her. That lingers today. That's very hard to accept. I have a lot of trouble with that. I have to go back to things like this and read it and say, oh yeah, that's why, dude. Did you forget already? Who are you to say when a person heals from this kind of treatment? I don't get to. This is living amends for me. Did I arouse bitterness? There was extreme bitterness that was apparent for a long time. Today I know it's still there, but not as much. Where was I at fault? I was disrespectful to my marriage, to my family with the infidelity. And I spent years in my family not expressing the love that they deserve. See, I'm too worried about them giving me the love that they could never give me, come to find out. I'm too worried about me looking good, me knowing what's right, and proving to everybody around me that I'm better than you. And I'm going to use you to validate my existence. And through all of that, I lost contact with what's important, with compassion and intimate connection with human beings that mean the most to us, our children and our wives and our fathers and our mothers and our siblings. We just lose touch of it and we justify it. And we say, well, I really didn't do much wrong. Okay, well, maybe you don't need to write this inventory then. I don't know. That's not my case. I'm here to check out the horrible ugliness in my life, recognize it so I can lift this darkness into the light. Because if I minimize it, then I'm dismissing it. There's nothing to release. Kind of wasting my time. What should I have done instead? It says here, in the relationship, we don't write not gotten involved in the first place. So when you get to this part, I'm like, well, I should have never hooked up with this broad. Or I should have never let this asshole pick me out and then move into my house. That's not what you should have done instead. We're looking for being especially explicit in question 9. If you refer back, you're going to refer back to this right in your sex ideal. Okay. So how could you have shown up better? I should have talked to her about how I was feeling. And how I wasn't attracted to her at the time. I should have talked. And it wasn't even that, really. It was more me just going through a crisis, man. Now that I really look back at it, there was so much fear of not being good enough and failure. And it was like life was falling apart right in front of me. And I didn't like it. So I was going to go change it. It really had nothing to do with her. I should have took the time to talk about, to think about the consequences of cheating. Although I didn't have the power to do that at the time, right? This is my new ideal. These are things I want to try and do from here on out. I should have tried to be a better husband instead of looking to her to be a better wife. See, how many times are we looking at them to be better, right? How about I try to be better? And I just stay there. How about my wife's got this saying, stay in your lane, man. Stay in your lane, right? It's so powerful. So I hate to hear it. And she uses it for everything, even coming in here to the workshop to talk with you guys. Stay in your lane, Jason. Don't cross the boundary. Talk about yourself. Worry about your own recovery. Quit worrying about everybody else's. So right. So who did I harm? We're going to write specific harm that comes to us, right? While we're writing this, this helps us in the amends process as well. The damage I did to her self-esteem comes to mind. Because it says, what harm came to you while writing? I mean, I could go on and on and on. But what came to me was the damage I did to her self-esteem. Creating this image of she doesn't even really have an identity. And she lives her whole life to please me and the family. It's been pretty horrible. She tells me today, you never lift me up. Right? I'm trying to look at that. Like, what does that look like? What does lifting up your partner look like? What also came to mind was guilt that I created for myself. It took me a very long time to get rid of. Doesn't mean I don't have shame in it or remorse about it, but I have forgiven myself and I'm not carrying around guilt behind all of the lies and the deceit. There is frustration because I have to recognize that that transfers to an attitude that my partner has about me at certain times. And I have to learn to accept that. It's difficult. And we all have different situations. I'm sharing mine with you guys to show that I've seen some truths. But again, how difficult it is to really to do anything about it on my own power. I can't. That's what I've really seen. Can't think my way through it. I can't force myself to act better. I've taken to prayer and it's very hard to do when I'm angry. So it takes a lot of practice. Okay. So this is my sex ideal. Okay. So now we're going to write a narrative after we've done these relationship inventories. We're going to write a narrative of what our future sex life would like to be, our relationship life. Okay. How would we want it? What are we going to pray to God? What are we going to walk towards? What are we going to help God, have God help us to Grow towards is what we read tonight. What do I want to ask God to help me grow towards? Okay. So this is mine. It says, God in the future, I would like to be intimate with my wife without sex. Sounds kind of crazy, but sexual relations is the way that we do connect. Never had a problem with that. Being intimate without sex is where our difficulty lies. Being able to have adult conversations to connect intimately without being physical. Still learning that. So difficult. So difficult. And what I do find is that if sexual relations are based off of that, everything is so much better and so much more pure. It's rad, right? So I'd like to be intimate with my wife without sex. I'd like to be able to connect through love, affection, and understanding rather than a physical connection. I would like to be removed of lust for any other woman and have it replaced with abstinence and purity with eyes only for my wife. That's a prayer that I say hundreds of times a week. Because here, I'd like it to be removed. Remember, I'm asking God to grow to it. I'm not going to be removed. I'm just aware of it. And I have to lift it up. It's very hard. I also read this to my wife, by the way. I cried when I read this to her. Before I wrote it. I'm standing in the kitchen. It's hard for her to hear. But it's my truth. I'd like to have a relationship without fear of being wrong, alone, or hurt. I would like to build a relationship with communication and respect for each other. God, please fill my relationship with my wife with your grace and your presence. And Lord, I ask that you allow me to love and protect and adore and respect and never to abuse, neglect, undervalue, or objectify. And then I wrote there in my fifth step, Jason, so I can do the same. And what he said was, you need to do that for yourself as well. I need to love, protect, adore, and respect myself and my wife. And I need to never abuse, neglect, undervalue, or objectify myself or my wife, right? Now, I told you I wrote the relationship inventory about my children, so I wrote an ideal about that as well. So God, I would also like to be the father you would have me be. Help me to listen and love rather to isolate and judge. Help me to be there when they need me. Help me to be a solid, trustworthy father that a young man can come to with honesty, looking for encouragement, never in fear of what I might say or think. Because I've judged them. I've been ruled with an iron fist. They don't want to talk to me. They don't trust me. I will tell you this today. You know, of course, they call my wife a lot more than they call me. They're grown. They're 34 and 30. But when shit hits the fan, they call dad, which is really cool. When they're in a jam, they call dad. And that's part of my ideal. That has been achieved. My kids can come to me with honesty and they can look for encouragement and they're not in fear of what I might say or think. Today they respect what I might say or think. And that's a testament to the change that Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of God has done in my life. Much harder to do with a spouse. That's why sex inventory is so difficult. So God, help me to have an unfailing love for these most important people that you have placed in my life, removed of selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So that's my sex ideal. That was one of the few inventory sheets that I wrote. So that gives you guys an idea of what we're about to do. I believe we're on assignment 19. We're going to take a week and we're going to do our utmost to get our inventory completed. Contemplating having a group next week to where we can just talk, ask questions, make sure everybody's kind of caught up. I'm going to pray about it. So we've got a week to finish up our inventory. And then we're going to move on to talking about our fifth step. So I'm going to say a prayer for you guys. May God bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. So that's what I would want for all of you. And thank you so much for being here.